We tend to forget how easy we've got it when it comes to water in our part of the world. We walk across the room, if that far, and turn a knob to make water come out of a tap. Fill the glass, slurp it down, story over. The story is much longer for people who do not live in the developed world. They have to work a good deal harder to obtain fresh water for drinking, cooking, bathing, and sanitation. The Los Angeles-based organization Dig Deep takes note of the issues with fresh water in parts of the world and seeks to focus attention on those issues. George McGraw is the founder and executive director of Dig Deep and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. George, welcome.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Nice to meet you.
Same here. It says right on your website that Dig Deep is not a water charity, so what are you?
Well, we are a human rights organization. So while most charities operate from the belief that, you know, one group of people with resources can help another group of people without resources, we fundamentally believe that every person, no matter their circumstances, has a human right to water, the water they need to live in dignity. And so when someone doesn't have access to water, it's not just a problem, it's an injustice.
So the term water poverty, I notice, is that your creation at Dig Deep?
It is. It's something we use to try to, you know, explain to people what life without water really is like. It's not just an inconvenience. It's not just a little bit difficult. It really is a poverty all of its own. I mean, if you don't have access to water, it affects every part of your life. It affects your ability to keep a job, your ability to get an education, your ability to even spend time playing with your kids or, you know, enjoying a little bit of leisure. So really, access to water is truly something that can change someone's life.
So how detailed do you get in determining what level of access to water? I mean, we're talking about the ability to walk to it, or are we talking about having taps in every home? I mean, how detailed do you get in your approach?
Well, you know, I used to do a little work for the United Nations. My background is in human rights law. And in human rights law, we get very detailed. We say that every person around the world needs between 50 and 100 liters per person per day. So that's somewhere between about 10 and 30 gallons. And they need that within 100 or within 1,000 meters of their home, and it needs to, you know, be free if they can't afford it. And if they can't afford it, it needs to not, you know, affect their ability to buy other things they need, like housing, medicine, or food. But, you know, in our work at Dig Deep, we get a lot more specific than that. I really am a firm believer that if we're going to provide access to water for people, the first thing we need to consider are the opinions and needs and wants of those individual people. So in some places, like in the United States where we work, we make sure people have running water in their homes because, you know, not to have running water here in the United States feels like poverty. And in other places like Uganda or South Sudan where we work, we provide well access or running water access in the middle of a village. And in there, you know, people don't want running water in their home. Actually, in fact, when we've built systems like that, people haven't used them as much because to collect water in the middle of a village is kind of a social activity that people look forward to every day.
Really, it is sort of a community center kind of process then.
Exactly. So cultural differences play a big part in this, and that's why, you know, sort of this human rights framework, considering the individual behind each of these projects is so important.
You mentioned specific countries, Uganda and South Sudan, but I want to come back to mentioning parts of the United States where you do some work. Explain that.
It's a little crazy how used to that fact I've gotten, but it really is sort of revolutionary for most people to find out that 1.7 million Americans right here in the U.S. don't have access to a safe source of clean drinking water at home. They live all over the place, primarily on Native reservations. About 13% of Native Americans don't have access. You can compare that, for instance, to the 99.6% of Black, White, Asian, and Hispanic Americans that do have access. Other places, the rural sort of parts of Appalachia or the Dakotas, some migrant and undocumented farm working communities, but all in all, 1.7 million Americans right here just quietly living in water poverty.
And so what kinds of things do you do within the United States?
So right now, our primary work is on the Navajo Reservation, which is the country's largest. I mean, it's huge. If it were a state, it would be our 10th biggest state. It takes up parts of Arizona, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico. And about 40% of people living there don't have running water at home. And the water they do have access to is generally pretty contaminated. I mean, daily life where we work there, primarily in New Mexico, looks a lot like daily life for some of our clients in Cameroon or in South Sudan. I mean, women and children especially wake up in the morning. They leave their house with a 5-gallon bucket. They walk to a livestock windmill or a pond or sometimes a water source that they have to, you know, sort of pay to fill up from. And then they pull that water home, boil it, and then use it for everything. And the average person on one of our projects uses just a few gallons of water a day, while the average American in any other place, for instance, Los Angeles, uses over 100.
Yeah, I was surprised at the figure, 50 to 100 liters per person per day is the general guideline.
Yeah, I mean, that's the amount you really need from a basic standpoint to protect your human dignity. So that's enough water to drink, to cook, to clean, to bathe, and to maintain health in the long term. Of course, in the U.S., we have a standard of living, as many other countries do, including, you know, Western Europe and a lot of the developed parts of Latin America and Asia, that would require us to have more water than that. But that 50 to 100 liters is really just the minimum.
I guess the reason it's so shocking to me is because I noticed on your website, too, the 4 liters challenge, which, you know, when you're talking about 50 to 100 on average per day, is it talking about getting by on 4 liters a day?
Yeah, I mean, you'll find that a lot of our clients in the developing world, and even here in the United States, get by on just a gallon or two in emergencies. I mean, they grab a gallon of water, and, you know, usually they have to spend a lot of time, sometimes their whole day, finding that safe gallon of clean water and then making it stretch, using it for everything for a day. So, you know, most Americans, we really can't conceptualize to ourselves what living without access to clean water really is, right? I mean, most of us, for our whole lives, have been able, like you said, just to walk across the room and turn on the tap or turn on the shower or, you know, jump in the pool. And so it's really difficult for us to imagine how difficult that life would be, how many new decisions you'd have to make during the day about what you can do and what you can't do based on how much water you have. So once a year we challenge, especially young Americans all over the country, to try living just 24 hours on a gallon or about 4 liters of water for everything that they do. And it's just sort of a funny, weird experience, but it's definitely not a gimmick. I mean, people really spend their time during the day measuring out their water for everything they do, and for the first time really think about what life would be like without it.
Well, I mean, you can't even flush the toilet with less than 4 liters, right?
No, in fact, I mean, when you flush a toilet in the United States, you're using more water in that single flush than almost a billion people around the world use every day.
Wow, that's an amazing figure. We're talking to George McGraw here on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the founder and executive director of the Los Angeles-based group Dig Deep. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about water poverty and how Dig Deep addresses it. 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Anne in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. George, we exchanged a few emails. I heard you and saw the segment that was done on Sunday morning, the CBS Sunday morning show. This was in August. And I was so moved by seeing that 8-minute segment with you and Lee Cowan that I thought, I want more people to hear and to see what your organization is all about. And so I'm calling specifically now to publicize that segment because I saw it last night again. It's only 8 minutes, and I really recommend the listening audience to tune in to see it. Visually, it captures so well what water poverty is all about, especially when you see the people who are so directly affected by it. And so I'm getting teary-eyed just talking about it and remembering that particular video. So please, Jeff, provide the link so that more people can see it.
Okay, can do, will. And thanks for that, Anne. Appreciate that.
So, Anne, it's so nice to put a voice to a name. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, how long ago did you shoot that segment?
They shot that segment in the spring of this year. The project has moved on considerably since then, but the supporters and viewers of CBS Sunday Morning have just been an incredible resource for us as an organization. CBS reported that it's their most watched news story of 2015. And, I mean, I can't tell you some of the calls and emails from nice people like Anne that we've gotten. Some people who have faced similar circumstances, we had a woman call a few weeks ago who was also just in tears on the phone sobbing. And she said that she's from Mississippi, and she, as an African-American woman, had grown up on a sharecropping plantation, which, you know, of course, that's an incredibly difficult life that just doesn't exist in the U.S. anymore. And she and her brothers and sisters would have to wake up in the morning and go to the well and haul water back from, you know, the rich landowner's house to their little sort of cabin that they were living in as kids. And she thought it was a terrible injustice and a really difficult life. And when they moved off of that farm and got running water for the first time, and when she saw sort of these sharecropping farms start to disappear, she thought to herself, thank God, you know, this problem is solved. And she saw this piece on CBS Sunday Morning and realized that there are so many people living in similar circumstances. And she's become a really sort of generous friend to the organization, giving what she has and helping us spread the story. And it just goes to show that there's so much to the American experience that we take for granted, but that other people living right here at home have had to struggle with. And so it really helps to put that in perspective.
So when we talk about delivering justice to people who live in water poverty, who does that place any burden of delivery or burden of proof upon? Because it's not necessarily the case of the rich landowner and the sharecropper just denying them access to good water. I mean, people sometimes live in places where there was water and there isn't anymore.
You're absolutely right. When we talk about human rights, we talk about a very specific legal relationship between a country and its citizens. I mean, there's no reason at our level of development here in the U.S. that anyone in the United States should live without access to water. And I really challenge my friends and colleagues in federal and state and local government to make this a priority and to really start to put resources and manpower behind this problem, because it is such an injustice. But when we talk about accountable parties, I mean, the U.S. is kind of a unique thing, right? I mean, in the mid-1800s, when the Navajo settled on their reservation for the first time, it wasn't uncommon in the western U.S. for people to get water from a place like a well. I mean, very few people in the western U.S. had access to running water, even in a city like Los Angeles. So while the rest of the country developed, there are these pockets of America, especially on Native reservations and in rural areas and in farm communities, where no development happened. And while we might expect a family like yours or mine, Jeffrey, to, you know, pay to hook their own home up to water now if they build it outside of a city or in a suburb, you just can't expect that same economic burden on a population or on a person that has no income or that's been sort of historically repressed or marginalized. So yeah, there is some definite responsibility that needs to happen at the federal and state level. But I also think that the beauty of America is that we've all benefited so much from living here that we can take a step back and help each other protect each other's rights by, you know, spreading this story and by helping with our resources and our physical labor.
But could, for example, the answer be, well, we can't get water to you where you are now, but we will move you 3 miles to where there is water? I mean, can it be that simple?
Yeah, in some cases, people are already doing it themselves. I mean, water poverty and other sorts of poverty, I mean, most of these families don't live with electricity, for instance, or access to telecommunications. That sometimes moves people by themselves. But it's especially difficult in the case of the Navajo or other tribal land, because these are ancestral lands. Even particular parcels, just a couple acres big, have been passed down, you know, for 5, 6, 10 generations. And there's such a spiritual and cultural connection to that land and to that lifestyle that it's, you know, almost impossible and maybe even an injustice in itself to ask people to give that up just to get something basic like clean water.
We're talking again to George McGraw, the founder and executive director of Dig Deep, which takes a look at water poverty around the world and seeks to address the issue there. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So I noticed the two basic branches in what you do, water access projects and education and advocacy programs. You mentioned some of the water access projects in places like Uganda and South Sudan. I mean, how many water systems do you help install or drill or and otherwise have a hand in creating over the course of a year?
Yeah, I think in 2014, we brought clean water access to about 33,000 people. This year, the number will be a little bit higher. And the number of particular water projects changes every year. We do not have a statisticized approach. So I think an important thing about being a human rights organization is you treat every person in every community as a unique partnership. You know, you're not out there with some sort of cookie-cutter approach saying, okay, here are the demographics in an area, and here's how we're going to scale in there and address this many people at a time. You really have to take your time, and one of the reasons is that water is such a personal element, right? I mean, we all use it for the most intimate things we do a day, and we all think about it differently. So the same approach is not going to work in every place. I mean, we've come into communities in South Sudan in which organizations like ours have already worked to build a well, for instance, and that community won't be using that resource. And it's as simple as the fact that, you know, they've never seen or tasted clean water before, and they don't like it. You know,
really?
It doesn't taste as earthy or as sweet as some of the dirtier water they've been drinking, the water that's making them tremendously ill. But when you've lived your whole life with those illnesses, with those parasites, and you've never taken the time or had the opportunity to drink clean water, you don't know the difference. And so you need to spend time with a community and figure out what solution works for them and help them sort of scale into that solution, help them take the lead. Because in the end, when you're, you know, recognizing and protecting people's, you know, dignity, as we do in human rights work, it's about the beneficiary. It's not about you.
And in fact, you form water councils, don't you, so that the people are actually taking a hand in their own fate?
We do. We really try. We don't really try. Hopefully we succeed. Everywhere we work, not just to build, you know, a single piece of infrastructure that provides access to water, we try to build a full utility. So we actually, like you said, develop local water councils, which are representative, democratically elected groups of local officials, especially ones that include women and minorities, usually for the first time in a decision-making role. And these sort of democratic councils establish things like tariff rates. I mean, people in rural South Sudan can pay for their water a lot less than we do, but just as easily as we can. And then those tariffs are held by that council and used to sort of pay for maintenance or upgrade the system over time. We do the same thing here in the United States. And that allows sort of, of course, a degree of community participation. If people have a complaint or a need, they can come to a group of people that's responsible for that. But also it provides for that financial stability and sustainability that really allow these systems to work for a long time.
How much harder does this task get, George, for you and for Dig Deep as the Earth's population continues to grow?
It gets a lot harder. You know, we've been successful as an international community lowering water poverty rates over the last decade. Since we made this a priority with the Millennium Development Goals in the year 2000, we've seen really significant strides. But of course, like you said, not only is the population growing, but a lot of other things are changing too. I mean, climate changes are pushing people in and out of communities all over the world. There are also demographic shifts that have to do with a lot of war and conflict. I mean, in South Sudan, where we work, we've seen tremendous political shifts over the last, you know, 5 years of working there that have pushed millions of people both in, you know, internally displacing them in the country and then outside of the borders. So, no, water will always be a challenge. It's not like, you know, you finally get everyone access and we're finished and we can sort of close up shop and move on. There's always going to be a population that we need to work with, and that's not just true of our organization. It's true of every community, every government, and many other organizations as well.
A lot of work ahead for the organization Dig Deep. George McGraw is the founder and executive director, and he joined us today on the Jefferson Exchange. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.